Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead. We are joined with fellow Simsbury High School alum Rob Stone, making his fourth appearance on the podcast, which I'm pretty sure is a record, although it might be tied with Richard Deitch. I'm not sure. How is it going out in Russia? By the way, Rob is going to be anchoring the World Cup coverage on Fox Sports.
Russia is good, my friend. You know, I don't really know much about Russia outside of Cold War and war games and Drago and Rocky IV. So it's been really pleasant to come here and experience the people and the culture the last couple days. And it really is a beautiful city. And you've been able to feel the last, you know, every 24-hour increment that we're here, you feel the energy and the momentum building here in this country. Leading up to the kickoff on Thursday. So everything has been great in Russia so far. Outside of the weather, a little gloomy, a little rainy, but that's all supposed to flip very soon.
Yeah, what is the weather like temperature-wise? Because on some of like the Fox Sports people's Instagrams, it looks a little bit cold.
Yeah, it's just overcast. It's gray. It's rainy. It's 60s, 50s, every once in a while, some 40s at night. But as Alexi Lawless says, it's great playing weather. So he's excited. It's just the people that wear makeup and have to worry about hair that aren't so thrilled about it.
So the World Cup kicks off Thursday, but we've got some big stuff coming on Fox on Wednesday. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's the announcement of who's going to be the host country or countries for the 2026 World Cup. There's only two nations in the bid process right now. It's a joint North American bid, Mexico, Canada, the United States, taking on Morocco. And that is expected to be announced when FIFA convenes the day before the World Cup opener on Wednesday. And this is a billions at stake, not just for North America and the United States, but really for every has a soccer federation out there. U.S. Soccer and Canada and Mexico have just promised these massive numbers that they will earn that will be then fed into all these other countries' soccer associations. And a lot of these countries really rely on that money to work on their grassroots, work on their officiating, work on building up their national teams. So there's a lot of people looking at the vote and saying, hey, you know, what country can best help me? Can Morocco's bid best help me? Or is it the joint North American bid? And it's a transformative moment if the World Cup comes back to the U.S. first time since 1994. It's been a long break away from North America. Of course, that'll be the expanded World Cup as well. But nobody really knows what's going on right now. It's going to be an open vote where literally everybody's going to hit their little pad at the same time. It's going to be very much you know, one of those game show type things where everybody take your pad out and hit Morocco, hit North America, or hit, you know, abstain. And as I said, billions at stake, and everybody's got kind of some different interest in how they're going to be voting.
Let's say that the North America bid wins. How many cities would the 2026 World Cup be spread across in Mexico, the United States, and Canada?
So the North American joint bid, just to break it down real quick, they're talking about $11 to $14 billion in profit and gross revenues. You're talking 48 countries would be playing 80 games over the course of we don't know how many weeks yet in North America. 1,100 players there. We mentioned 80 games. 60 of those would be played in the United States, including every game in the knockout stage.
As you sit here a few days before the World Cup starts, let's say you're talking to a casual soccer observer, not unlike myself. What are some of the games you have circled on your calendar that you don't think that people should schedule a morning meeting during?
Well, opening day, there's only one game. It's the two lowest ranked teams here in the tournament, which ordinarily I think would be a bit of a, maybe I'll take a pass on it. But the fact that it's the host country, the fact that President Putin is going to be in the stands watching it, and the fact it's the only game of the day on the opening day of this World Cup here in Europe, I think you circle Saudi Arabia and Russia. I'm fascinated to see how the Russian country is going to embrace this tournament and how the team is going to be able to handle this pressure. Only one host country has never made it out of the group stage. That was in 2010 in South Africa. And a lot of people think Russia is going to be that second team. But if you get that opening game momentum, you get that country rallying behind you, you get your president on your side, you know, the Putin pressure backs off a little bit, and now you've got some momentum. To me, that's a fascinating topic. The next day is really that group stage game that everybody's talking about, Portugal and Spain. 2 years ago, Portugal won the European Championship. They've got one of those icons in Ronaldo who you want to see play every time he's on the field. And then you have Spain, who years ago was the Germany of right now, right? They were this juggernaut. They were winning European Championship, World Cup, European Championship. And then they had a dip. Now they've been able to blend the old guard and some of these new talents together. And a lot of people see Spain as a team that's going to be playing late into July. And then the other one for me is Group E and Mexico. They both, their group play against one another. Germany, the defending champs, pretty much the odds-on favorite to defend that title. A lot of people like Mexico. They've had this great history of making it out of the group stage and then finding some roadblocks. So I think those are three of the early games. But, you know, I can go down the list of every group and give you a reason why you want to watch Group D. You want to watch Argentina with Lionel Messi. You want to watch Iceland play because they're Iceland. Nobody dislikes Iceland. And you want to see that Viking clap. You want to see Group B and Brazil play because Neymar's coming off this injury. He's played two games and scored two goals. He looks like the Neymar of old, plus one. So I think every day there's going to be some factors to motivate just the sporting population of the United States to watch this tournament.
And then where do you stand on the Messi-Ronaldo debate? Who's better right now? Who has a better body of work throughout his career?
That is a really tough one. A lot of people tend to lean into the Messi camp. I like Ronaldo. Look, this guy's won three consecutive Champions League titles for Real Madrid. He won a European championship 2 years ago. And, you know, Messi hasn't done it on that international stage. And that's been that one knock on him. But Messi has led his country to three consecutive major tournament finals only to fall. And it's haunting him. And I just have this feeling that either it's going to be a complete train wreck in the group stage, or it's going to be an absolute motivated Messi who is really just going to say, guys, I got it. He's going to put it on his shoulders. He's going to dance around Croatia, Nigeria, and Iceland and get Argentina that elusive title that they've been waiting for since the Diego Maradona age.
So you mentioned that this could be Messi's last World Cup at 31. I feel like, though, that he's the type of athlete that could age well enough with his frame. He's not a sculpture athlete like Ronaldo, where I feel like Messi could still be pretty good at age 35.
He's been fortunate that he's avoided kind of some major injuries through his career. But, you know, there's no guarantee that you're getting to a World Cup. You know, Messi really had to take the bull by the horns on the last day just to get Argentina here. You know, and what will his role be going forward? You know, we only know him as this center midfielder maestro type guy who weaves and bobs and scores these beautiful goals. But at some point, the legs are going to slow down and the younger kids are going to catch up to him. You know, does his game translate coming off the bench or playing out wide? Would he even accept that type of role? Who knows? I would love to see him play 4 years from now, but I think my talking point is let's enjoy him right now when he's still in his prime.
So I'm going to go through the odds on the World Cup from a gambling perspective. These are from Jeff Sherman, who's an odds maker at the Las Vegas Superbook. The favorites are Germany and Brazil at 4-1, France and Spain at 6-1, Argentina at 7-1, Belgium at 10-1. From there, we get to a middle class of England at 20-1, Portugal at 25-1, Uruguay and Croatia at 30-1, Colombia at 40-1, Poland and Mexico at 50-1. Does anything on that board stand out to you as being really interesting as either a long shot or a favorite?
Not a ton. I think if you're desperate to find that outside nation, I would go to Uruguay, ranked 14th in the nation right now. They kind of have an experiment-free roster from what they've been rolling out lately. They're playing in the weakest group in World Cup history, and they have two golden boot favorites, which is the person who will be the leading scorer at the tournament in Suarez, Cavani. They've got a backline pairing of two guys that play their club ball together, Atletico Madrid, so they're familiar with one another. So I would throw Uruguay in that mix, but, you know, there's always the chaos of Luis Suarez, and, you know, he's had so many incidents at the World Cup, you know, in 2010 with that intentional handball, the biting incident in 2014. So, you know, that's why they're a bit of a long shot, right? Because you just don't know what's going on. The other one, I guess, would be in South America, Los Cafeteros, Colombia, ranked 16th. In the world right now. They open up with Japan. Their group is fairly favorable. A lot of people see them probably winning Group H over Poland. Travel, you know, it's a very big country here in Russia. Their travel is the least amount of any group stage team. So that has to be a positive. They've got James Rodriguez, who won the Golden Boot 4 years ago, seems to have found his footing at Bayern Munich this season. And Radamel Falcao, who at one point was, you know, one of those darlings of international soccer where everybody wanted him. Well, he tore his ACL. He had to miss the World Cup 4 years ago. Now he's on the upswing, 24 goals for Monaco this year. So in the end, if you're really looking to make some money on a long shot, your safe bet is just go to South America or go to Europe, because it'll be one of those teams. But in the end, I only see a handful of nations actually winning this tournament. Germany and Brazil, as you mentioned, as the two big favorites. I'll throw Argentina in that mix as well. A lot of people are giving Spain some love. I like France as well, but my sleeper, I think you had them at 10-1, is Belgium. I think Belgium has the makeup, strong midfield play, a great goalkeeper, forward excellence. They're in the midst of this golden generation. If it's Rob Stone's money, I'm putting it on Belgium.
Cool. Okay, so we've gotten this far. We haven't talked about the United States yet. I did that as a courtesy because I know you're probably sick of at least answering questions about them off the top. But if you are in charge of U.S. soccer over the next 4 years, how do they avoid repeating not making the World Cup for Qatar in 2022?
Oh, I'd be stunned if they don't make it. I think this was a blip on the radar. And I think it was a necessary blip. I think it was an opportunity for U.S. soccer to hit a reset button with the U.S. men's program. I think this team had gotten away from their true identity, who they are. You know, everybody wants to play like Barcelona or Real Madrid or Spain and Germany, but sometimes you just don't have the horses to do it. And we've got American horses and they know how to play the game. But if you take away that blue collar mentality and that drive and determination, you try to kind of overthink the tactics sometimes. I think you put yourself in a bad position. I think the U.S. needs to get back to its roots, get back to who they are. I think they're back to playing with a chip on their shoulder right now. They've got a lot of young talent who showed very well in Lyon, tying France the other night, 1-1, a game that we all sat around a local establishment at 10 p.m. Moscow time to watch the young kids with a really brave showing against one of the World Cup favorites. I don't think there's like a magic thing, Ryan, where I'm saying this, you know, A, B, and C has to happen. But the general thought is get back to who you are, embrace your American roots, build around Christian Pulisic. And there's a lot of good, young, exciting talent out there that needs some playing time. And they need it at the club level. But the last couple of months, interim coach Dave Sarakin has been giving them that time at the international level. And I think in the long run, as much as it stings right now this summer, I think this is going to be a positive for U.S. soccer. But I'll say this, if it came down to a choice of would the U.S. be one of the countries to host the 2026 World Cup or would the U.S. make the World Cup this summer, what would you rather have? You would say, hey, both, and both should happen. But you would take the World Cup heading back to North America and the United States in 2026 over the U.S. being here in Russia this summer.
Yeah, that's a fair answer. So speaking of young dynamic players, in this World Cup field, who are some players who are, I don't know, 22, 23 or under, and you think have the potential to really become breakout stars on this international stage?
Yeah, it's so hard to kind of categorize somebody as a breakout star because everybody knows who you are. If you have any talent, scouts are on you. You know, you're already lined up on your national team, and it's hard to say, you know, who don't people know about. You know, Kylian Mbappe is a very young teenage talent, but you got to think a lot of people know what he's done the last couple of years between Monaco and PSG and where he is right now with the French national team. I think if you want to characterize, you know, him as a young guy, I think he's going to be a breakout star. I think he's a wonderful talent. That's a fantastic player to watch. I think Peru is going to have a couple guys that might surprise you, that maybe not a lot of people know about, that have the chance to kind of catch some people off guard and say, wait a second, you know, like this kid, Christian Cueva, you know, 20-year-old midfielder, kind of a next level type dribbler. These are guys that are going to attract some attention, but also it's, you know, Christian Eriksen, you know, people know him from Tottenham, but when he comes with Denmark, he's just a different type of player that really guy who's primed to have a huge breakout type summer as well. And then for Germany, Timo Werner, you know, is he that next great German striker at a World Cup? They always seem to have somebody who just keeps burying the ball. And a lot of people think that Timo is that next guy in the German pipeline. So I think there's a lot of good established talent. It's very difficult to find somebody that you haven't heard about who's going to break out this year, just because we're in this golden age of soccer where we really have these three icons at their height playing right now in Neymar and Messi and Ronaldo. And I think it's very difficult for a player to kind of break through that noise and stand up and say, hey, folks, take notice of what I've done and who I am.
Switching away from soccer, it's been a good few months for Fox's programming acquisition as far as Rob Stone is concerned. First in March, you guys landed the Professional Bowling League, which you broadcasted for many years at ESPN. And then recently is announced that Fox is going to be adding WWE SmackDown, which you're a big fan of, in 2019. I don't know, did you make a deal with the devil to get these things done? Or how excited were you when you found out that Fox was going to be adding these rights?
Yeah, no deals for me. Look, I love my bosses and the guys on the fifth floor executive level, but they don't come to me with programming type decisions. But I shared words with certain people when the bowling conversation was going on, and they came to me to get my take on certain elements of that property, and I shared some thoughts with our president about WWE. You know, there are a couple wrestling nerds running around Fox Sports, and we made it clear who we are, and we also chimed in with some thoughts and some comments and some excitement about bringing in that entity. And you know, when FS1 first launched, there were some programming conversations about, you know, do we go after professional wrestling? And at that time they made a decision that wasn't right for them at that structure. But look, wrestling brings in millions and millions of eyeballs, and it's a pretty brave move, and we're all very curious to see what other kind of programming around WWE's properties come over to Fox, you know, what these potential studio shows might be and how they might look and how it's going to play. But clearly for me, you know, my sport passions, every one of them is checked right now at Fox. And it's a little frightening that everything is aligning itself right now, to be honest with you.
I haven't seen anything suggesting that this could happen, but I think it's almost a no-brainer to put NXT on FS1. But would you be in favor of that? I mean, obviously, I think you would say in a vacuum, yes, but could you see it happening potentially?
Yeah, I don't know what the deal rights are for that, but it made a ton of sense. I think that was one of the properties being discussed several years ago about potentially acquiring here at Fox. And, you know, certainly that's a property that has really grown and found a strong audience for it as well. I would have loved to have seen Raw come here. You know, I would have loved to have seen Raw on Fox and SmackDown on FS1 if I had my wrestling programming druthers. But look, I'm not writing those checks for those properties, and those are some hearty checks. You got to lose a couple zeros for me to even consider writing something out of my bank account compared to what those guys have been
more than a
towards
couple,
the WWE. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what they do with Raw and SmackDown, because it's very plausible that being on the Big Fox broadcast network with all of the promotion, especially during NFL season and the World Series, and like Big Ten and Big 12 college football, that SmackDown could be getting not just more viewers than Raw, but substantially. So I wonder if we're going to see the paradigm shift where SmackDown is no longer believed to be the B show, and if they're going to keep their talent separate, or they decide like that they don't want these issues between Fox and NBC and they go back to having their stars appear on both shows. I mean, there's no real answers right now that are out there, so I'm just thinking out loud, but it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, I don't know what that answer is either, because there is the split in your host television outlets, and what type of unity will there be? I have no idea. I don't think anybody knows right now. My guess is the folks in Stanford, and they have some time to discuss it, are trying to sort that out right now. Doing a brand draft is a tricky component when you're dealing with two different networks, and clearly, we would want more high tier level talent and more people that would drive the viewership. So that's a delicate balance that our friends at WWE are going to have to try and dance for a while.
Yeah, I'm probably only like five or six people who it could get contentious over. But if you're like Fox and you just paid all this money, you don't want like Raw having exclusive rights to John Cena and Ronda Rousey and vice versa. So yeah, like they're gonna have to sort it out somehow.
The wording of those contracts will be very interesting. How that top tier talent gets allocated. And then look, as well as I do, some talents just kind of burst on the scene, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, we've got to have more Braun Strowman, right?
Yeah.
When in the past he wasn't really much of a property. So it's always changing, and you have to be nimble in this business, and the WWE has to be nimble literally every week with their storylines and who's playing to what type of audience. So it'll be something to keep an eye on. I'm very curious how all networks are going to manage and how those shows are going to look.
Let's say they called you and they're like, we want you to host a weekly WWE studio show on FS1. You're down, right?
I got to check with the wife, number one, because I got a lot of stuff on the schedule and more might be added to it. But I'll tell you what, I'd be down to listen. I love what I do with all my soccer coverage and everything that I've been fortunate enough to do with college football and college basketball. And it's hard for me to find time to do more. I think I'm going to find time to do more. And if WWE came calling and I was somebody they might want to talk to, hell yeah, I'm going to sit down and listen. Just to have a meeting with Triple H or Stephanie or Vince, that alone is something to write in the book about. So even if they tell me I suck and I'm horrible and they don't want me, at least I had a meeting with those guys. That's still pretty awesome.
I agree with you there. I know you're super busy in Russia this week getting ready to anchor all of Fox's World Cup coverage. Is there anything we didn't discuss about the World Cup or about just general what you do for Fox Sports that you want to talk about right now?
Well, I think you just need to remember that start your day with Fox and FS1 and the amount of coverage that we're bringing you on television and digitally as well is really unparalleled and something different for the American viewing audience. I was fortunate enough to work several World Cups with ESPN, and they were wonderful with how they grew this property and how they grew the sport. And we are so thankful for what they did. And I just want everybody to know that, we've taken that baton from Bob Lee and company, and we're going to work with it in in a safe fashion and in an entertaining fashion. And I think in the end, people are going to walk away from our presentation and say, you know what, they did us right, they did soccer right, they did World Cup right.
Thank you so much, Rob. Great. Best of luck the next few weeks. Hope to talk with you again in a few months. Maybe get you on one of our WWE post-game shows at some point.
You got it. Hey, you got my Russia burner number now, guys. So, you know, you're one of the few, the proud. So use it wisely. You got me.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks so much again, Rob. Great luck.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
Touched.